You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is The Pegasus. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
All right, and we have a couple guests with us. How about we also pull the one from the UK? Tell us, who are you?
Hi, I'm coming from England.
Ah, Warwickshire in England, right?
Warwickshire in England, yeah. Slap bang in the middle.
Slap bang in the middle. And in the middle, he means 50 miles to the one end and 50 miles to the other end, and he's in the middle.
Yeah, 100.
Oh, is it?
Sorry, I'm really sorry, but when you say in the middle, it's about as far north as I'm prepared to go.
Oh, is this the cutoff? Warwickshire's the cutoff, is it?
Actually, it's not. It's further south than that. I think it's like Birmingham.
Well, Destination Star Trek was in Birmingham. Did you not go to that?
I never got to that one. I got to the... And in complete fairness, I moaned about it because they had a couple of Destination Star Treks in London, which London's great. It's just down the road. And when they did the one in Birmingham, it's like, And I fully appreciate, by the way, I fully appreciate that the cost of doing it in Birmingham is probably a quarter of the cost of doing it in London.
Yes.
I accept that. And they have to make it work. And just logistically, they have to make it work. And also, the NEC is decent. So it's not that it's not decent. And the... and the exhibition halls in London are also kind of, you know, they get filled up well in advance, and I'm sure they would have to put down significant money in for that. So I'm not complaining, but I didn't manage to get to it, which is doing really.
The other advantage of doing it in Birmingham is it's in the centre of the country, so people from Scotland, Wales, and all that can find it easy to get to, whereas not everyone wants to go to the bottom bit.
It depends when you say it's so when you say centre, you're saying.
It's in the Midlands, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's in the middle if you consider like land. It's not in the middle if you consider population density. That it's like claiming that what's it, the middle of Canada's like Saskatchewan.
Well, it's still classed as, I don't know, they still call it the second city.
Where? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't want to get into any more trouble about it. By the way, is Star Trek.
No, we'll have people from Birmingham writing.
Star Trek, Destination Star Trek, is that happening this year?
No, not that I'm. No, they haven't announced anything. It all depends on the restrictions, doesn't it?
Well, no, actually, I'm staying here that it's on for, and they are selling tickets, and it's London, I'm afraid, again, but for the 12th to the 14th of November. So I don't know if
the restrictions will be well lifted by then.
Yeah. Okay, Luke, okay. We should. I said they've got a whole load of Voyager people. I should go.
Okay, anyway. Well. Why don't we talk to somebody from the Post Office of Canada? Is there anybody we know that works at the Post Office in Canada?
Oh, I thought you forgot about me. So
hey!
Geography there, so.
There you are!
I thought you would have jumped in when he said Saskatchewan, to be honest.
I've never been there. I don't know anything about Saskatchewan.
Where are the hinterlands?
Yeah,
is there such a thing? There. Okay, good. Anyway. Okay, so, yeah, I was just looking you up, Sean. Letter carrier, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately.
You know, we used to joke with my mother about who my real father is because, you know, either it's, you know...
Why would you do that?
Oh, we always did that. It was I could be one of my uncles because he stuttered a lot. Or... I just feel this compulsion to deliver mail, but I don't know why. Although I did work in a mailroom for 8 years, so Anyway. So, let's talk about Pegasus, guys. Thank you for coming on, both of you. Now, this is going to be a little more difficult with two guests, but hey, what the hell. It's not like we run a professional ship here anyway.
What? How's it going to be more difficult, though? The difficulty isn't proportional to the number of guests.
Oh, sure it is.
Is it?
Yes, when you have everybody that wants to say something at the same time. Three is what bad enough. Four, that's going to be tough. But right. It's okay. We'll be fine.
I will shut up. I will be quiet, and I will let people talk.
Matter of fact, James, why don't we both just shut up and let our guests do it? Mm-hmm. If we have anything we have to say, we'll ask.
And actually, I am going to be what I am going to be. I'm going to try my best to keep us not on tangents. Okay, away from the tangent.
Very good. So, okay. The Pegasus. Okay. Excuse me. I have to do something real quick. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, I know. I don't know why I woke up with a terrifying cold today. And Windows 10 has changed it to where I can't just get the Windows properties for sound properties. I have to find it, you know, so that I can mute myself when needed. But I can't find it anymore. Sound control panel. There it is.
Okay. Well, keep it up. Keep it up.
Got it.
So, Lou, I hope you've not coming down with any kind of cold / coronavirus related illness. Have you guys been vaccinated? You guys must have.
By now, next week is my second one.
Ah, perfect.
I hope so, because I do feel the cough coming on. Okay. The synopsis for tonight's episode is: when Riker's first commanding officer comes aboard to aid in the search for the vessel they served on, he is forced to rethink the actions he took at that time. This is the 12th episode of Season 7 of Star Trek The Next Generation. First aired on January 10th, 1994. It was written by Ronald D. Moore, directed by LeVar Burton. That explains why I like it. Guest star. Nancy Walter as Admiral Margaret Blackwell. Special guest star, Terry O'Quinn as Eric Pressman. And just, you know.
He's John Locke. He's not Pressman. He's John Locke from Lost.
Oh, is he? Oh, I got to say, I don't remember. I have seen a little bit of that episode, that series, but I never really got into it, so.
You should feel shame.
I do all the time, whether it's about Lost or not.
I thought it was rubbish.
I have
okay.
Wait. Lost.
Okay. I watched the first episode. My wife, when she started the series, it seemed to be good, but as time progressed, it became rubbish. You're right. At the beginning, when they all get stranded, and it's pretty action-packed, yes, but as it goes on, I'm not so into it. Okay, so anyway, we can't forget about Michael Mack as Sorrel. What an incredible actor he was. And there's no computer voice to speak of today. So what do we think of this episode? Colin, I'm sorry. Let's start with you. What's your initial thoughts?
I like this episode because it gives us a backstory into Riker. And it's, you know, he's not the holier-than-thou person he's up to now. We find out why the Federation haven't got cloaks, because that's always been skirted around, why the Federation has never had cloaking technology, so we find that out. And also, it's yet another long line of admirals who are complete douchebags, yet seem to manage to make it to the top of the echelons in Star Trek. It's always puzzled me how you obviously need to be a complete dickhead to be an admiral.
Yeah. That is true, but okay. Well, thank you, Sean. How about you? Where are you standing on this one?
I like it a lot. Just exactly like Colin said, it's very good. You got the bad moral, and the acting is superb by everybody involved. You get to see Riker's vulnerabilities, and since he's one of my all-time favorite characters, it's good to see more sides of him. And in fact, it was such a good episode, I had to watch the sequel immediately following.
Why? Why?
That's ridiculous. Come on.
Because I wanted to watch them back to back to get a different perspective on the final episode of Enterprise. And
it doesn't
sure,
fit,
it's,
though, does it?
Well, no, and it's 11 years later, and they don't look the same. And Counselor Troi is in the Enterprise episode, but I don't know if she was in the Next Generation episode at all. I can't remember her being in there. Actually, when you watch it from that perspective, that final episode of Enterprise, it's not that bad, actually, when it comes right down to it.
Did you find then, Sean, that if you watched them back to back, Did you find yourself asking when on earth did Riker find time to run the hard deck program?
A little bit, because he was in there an awful lot.
Yeah. And considering there's so much going on in this episode, you're thinking, when did he run that program?
Right. Because there was no time for that. But it's cute. It's always good to see Riker in as many different Star Trek series as possible. If we can somehow find a way to put him into Discovery, I will be a happy man.
Okay.
Well, it's in the future now, so we could be his great nth removed son.
Exactly.
Because as we know, everyone in Star Trek looks like their ancestors.
Yeah, that's true.
Very much so. Even the same name as well.
Yes.
Worf? Are we talking Worf, the security guard, or Worf,
you've got
lawyer, Klingon lawyer?
DS9, none of his staff. In DS9, she plays herself and her nan.
Mm-hmm. So who plays her nan?
Nana Vista is an episode in DS9 where she plays herself and a nan.
Oh yeah,
I did not notice that.
Yeah,
the one that I think is really odd is the one where Janeway plays her ancestor, like, you know, 400 years removed.
Oh yeah, back on
the millennial gate one.
Yeah, 1159, I think it is.
That sounds right.
That was a bit of a weird one.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, and it's Voyager, so there.
And obviously Kirk as well, right? Kirk in the Operation Annihilate, I think it would have been. He plays Kirk with moustache.
Yeah, Worf plays his grandfather in the movie.
Mm-hmm. The lawyer.
Yeah.
Klingon defense lawyer, utterly useless, but okay. All right, then, James, how about you? What's your initial thoughts on this?
Okay, my initial thoughts on this is that, and I've mentioned this before on the show, I don't like Riker. This is a Riker-centric episode, but it's the best Riker episode, I think, in the entire series. I think this is excellent. I love it from start to finish. I think it's really, really cool. And, I don't think I'm going to reassess my fondness for Riker.
You don't like Riker? Explain yourself, Lucy.
So, the problem with Riker is, one of the biggest problems I have with Riker is he ends up with Troi at the end, right? It's like, he's Troi's way out of her league.
For sure, sure.
He like hangs around for like 20 years or so, you know, getting fat and growing a beard and basically being an also-ran on the Enterprise. But somehow his perfect woman is just hanging around. I mean, it's a ridiculous male-centric fantasy that Riker would ever end up with Troi. It's ridiculous. I mean,
and
I
also his perfect woman has been with Worf.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah.
So
I'm not the biggest fan of Riker. I don't know if I ever kind of saw the appeal. Having said that, by the way, I do recall when I was watching the series originally, I didn't like Picard either. I remember thinking, going into the Best of Both Worlds, wouldn't it be great if they just killed off Picard and started again with Riker?
Hang on, James, you don't like Riker. You weren't keen on Picard at the start. So when?
So basically, if it was up to me, the Next Generation would have been entirely Data and various Data like clones. So Data, Law, B4, and an occasional appearance by Soon would have been a great show. That's what I needed.
Clearly,
you do a podcast about it.
I was going to say, clearly, when I made this podcast, I should have come up with some interview questions before you started.
Yeah.
But by the way, I mean, I think Picard's really grown on me. Certainly, he's a much better character than I ever thought he was when I was growing up, just because you kind of, you know, when you're a pipsqueak, you don't quite have the appreciation of you know, what he's doing, or at least I didn't. I mean, I'm possibly a moron. And yeah, I'm not that keen on Worf either. I hate Star Trek.
Wow.
Clearly you do. You probably even like Voyager is the best.
Well, no. The thing is, I cannot wait now for James to do DS9 because he if he doesn't like Next Generation, I can't wait for him to get onto DS9.
Oh, what? No. The DS9's the best series, right? And also the characters in DS9 are great. They are, oh, yes. I mean, so I don't want to start on the down. I'm not that keen on Sisko. but Kira is the best number one, right? O'Brien is awesome. Bashir is awesome. Odo is awesome.
Bashir is not awesome. Bashir is a pervert.
No, in
the first couple seasons there, he's a horrible person.
Yeah, he's the pervert inside all of us.
But I think we're talking about the Pegasus, right?
I don't remember.
There was a time I didn't like the Next Generation at all. And keep in mind, I think I'm older than all three of you. So chances are, I was watching... you watch it, young man. I was watching Star Trek in the 70s, and I was
watching Star Trek when your grandfather was still in diapers.
Yeah, there you go. Yes. So, I mean, I remember thinking, bull, this stuff sucks. There's no way it's going to be the Captain Kirk, Spock, and McCoy type quality. And so I refused to watch it. What's funny, I'm now there with Discovery. I'm forcing myself to watch it, and I keep going, oh, God, why do I got to watch this? Because I just caught up. I now know why somebody made captain after somebody else made first officer. And I'm still going, Jesus, come on. For both of them, no less.
Yeah, and after spending a big hoo-ha saying we're going to do the entire series from the point of the first officer, she's now a captain.
Yes.
It's a bit like Sisko, right? When it was like, oh, it's not going to be a captain, it's going to be a commander. And it's like, yeah, as soon as you possibly can, let's promote him to captain.
Right. And here's another thing. Wesley Crusher never once had me. He was an acting ensign, yet he still hadn't gone to the academy. Technically, the crew member is still in the academy. She's an ensign, or did she already graduate? Tilly, I think her name is.
I think she's fine.
No, okay, Tilly graduated.
Yeah, she's right. Okay, so she's a full ensign, not acting. So, but what in the hell would qualify her as a first officer or acting captain? What, a couple of years on the job?
No, but actually, to be honest with you, in complete fairness, I kind of appreciate that more than what they did on Voyager, where they basically just froze everything, right? So, on Voyager, after the first episode, everyone is in place, everyone has their role, and it literally is expected to stay like that for the 70 years it takes them to get back.
Yeah, but everyone gets promoted on Voyager except for Harry.
Well, yeah.
When you say promoted, right, they go from junior ensign to senior ensign. So junior lieutenant to senior lieutenant. It's not like...
Promotion.
Commander.
We need to get to Voyager at some point because I seem to remember the two people got demoted and then re-promoted.
That was Paris.
Yeah.
No.
But Tilly makes more sense than Kirk in the JJ films, who goes out on one mission and then gets his own ship.
Yes. Yeah, it does. You're right there. But yeah, no, Paris was demoted. But here's the thing. He was demoted to ensign and then re-promoted. But was that them or was that the gelatinous crew that dissolved as they went along?
That was
thing we said at the start about not having any tangents?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I don't remember.
Some of you guys want to go home. Okay, so you want to go to bed tonight. Okay, let's continue on about the Pegasus. Okay, let's discuss before we get into Pegasus, the Treaty of Alderaan.
Yes.
So, okay, the Treaty of Alderaan. I read, thank you, Memory Alpha, that it was created 60 years ago before the episode. And a couple things is it reinforces and redefines the Romulan neutral zone, and anybody who violates it is considered an act of war. Well, of course, they always violate it, so let's forget that. Prohibited the development or use of cloaking technology by the Federation. Other than the Federation being at the brink of surrender, why would they have ever allowed that?
Because they were at the brink of surrender, right?
Were they?
Then, well, I mean, you don't want to start a war on the back of a tech that you're like, you know, 30 years behind on, right? That I don't think, you know, had
well, it depends on how you're looking at the war. Are you looking at the war from TOS, or you're looking at the war from when Enterprise, or you're looking at the war from Next Generation? Because if you look at the war from TOS, then they clearly say in TOS that they thought they had no visual communication with the Romulans during the war, and the treaty was conducted over subspace radio.
Yeah.
Yet, in and they also don't make out that the cloaking technology in TOS is new. Yet in Enterprise, there's an episode where the Romulans have cloak ships and cloak mines. Mm-hmm. So it depends on which series you're looking at the Romulan War from, and then in TNG they take a different stance on the Romulan War.
Where does it make any sense that our enemy will allow them to create technology, cloaking technology, they can use it? Let's say the TOS era. Both the Romulans and the Klingons are both enemies, and they both have cloaking technology.
Yeah, but that's explained in an episode in TOS, because the Romulans get the D7 blueprints to build the D7 ship, and then they're retconned that in exchange for them getting the D7 blueprints, the Klingons got cloaking technology from the Romulans. But then in Discovery, they undo all that by saying that I can't think of his name, Kuvamar, invented cloaking technology way before TOS.
Okay, so we have no idea when it was created or who created it.
But it all depends on if each series takes, you know, the Romulans and the Romulan War and cloaking technology in different. It's like the Klingons. Every time they do a new series, the Klingons look different.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I mean, the general point here is that I don't think it's a contradiction that the Federation would have entered into a treaty that prevented them from developing cloaking devices, just because, you know, the Federation hasn't always been almighty, right? You know, and when you're the smaller party, you get terms dictated to you.
Yeah, and it's also the premise for it was based on the non-proliferation treaty that Russia and America signed.
Mm.
That's the premise behind this. It's like, you know, mutual annihilation. We've got to give something up. Okay, we'll give up X amount of nuclear missiles. The premise for that was, okay, we need to give something up to end this war. So the Romulans says, okay, you can't have cloaking technology.
And then we had the Philadelphia experiment, where the U.S. Navy tried to get something of, like, cloaking technology.
Yeah.
Okay, so it just, to me, it made no sense that they would allow that, assuming there was technology like that back then. Why the Federation would be the only ones to agree? Why shouldn't they all three agree to no cloaking technology?
But there's a trade-off, Luke, because if you think of the early TNG episodes, a Romulan Derelict warship was running a cloak at full warp, and they couldn't maintain an active cloak because they had to divert energy to go to full warp.
Mm-hmm.
So by not having the cloaking technology, if you watch that episode, then you have to conclude that the Federation starships are therefore faster.
Yes. Okay, yeah, you're right there. Okay, so now we're in the 24th century. Let's talk in TNG era. The Klingons are our allies. So why couldn't the Federation try to renegotiate this treaty and get cloaking technology back in? Because the Romulans wouldn't be facing just the Federation. They're now facing the Klingons and the Federation. So couldn't we be in a better position to force it?
Yeah, but it would have made for a much less interesting episode.
Somebody always comes back to that. Somebody always comes back to that.
Well, yeah, it's all about the plot. Never mind the actual internal logistics and logic of the universe. No, it's all about the stories.
Yeah, it's like Deanna, one which is an empath, one which is a telepath.
That's right.
By the time, you know, the Federation ended up having a cloaking device on the Defiant, I mean, it was barely used, right?
Well, they borrowed it from the Romulans.
Even in that instance, the cloaking technology was done with the Romulans.
Yeah, sure, exactly. But it's not even that it even came up that they needed it that often.
Because the Jem'Hadar could just bypass it.
Yeah, and they were only allowed to use it in the Gamma Quadrant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the Romulan officer on board, operating it, which they jettisoned her out pretty quick.
Yeah.
Well, that was too much cost for the.
Is that what it was?
I would imagine. We don't need this extra person who we have to write in every time we go on the Defiant. Let's just get rid of her.
Sure. I thought you were talking about actually like the Federation. It's like, should we use the clerk? No, we haven't been bothered to bring along such and such. I'm not prepared to pay for her quarters at all.
No, I was talking about real life.
Yeah.
We can't find the run.
When he actually went through the wormhole, Nontom's out of 10, it was a runabout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they couldn't find the Romulan Seska anyway, so it's all right.
Nah.
Okay, the episode. Yes. I do believe it was.
Yeah, I think it was.
So, she's currently alive. She's back from the Delta Quadrant. She's no longer a Cardassian. She is now a Romulan. So, it's Captain Picard Day. Woohoo!
They do.
I'm a role model.
Yeah. So the ship, the children on the ship have made cartoon drawings of the captain with maybe one creating a voodoo doll that Rocker wants to take home and live with, I guess. I don't know. He tried to walk out with it. There's a clay sculpture of Picard's head, which, one of the kids won.
Oh, yes, that's right. Deanna was in that one scene in that episode, and that's it.
Yes. I don't see why it has to be me, because you're the captain. And we do find out that later on that there's going to be a Commander Riker Day next month, which I don't know about you, but I feel cheated that we didn't get to see that.
I'm very sad myself.
Yes. So,
the original idea for this opening segment was that I was going to do Pygmalion. There was going to have Data Troi and Riker doing Pygmalion, and Picard walks in on them.
This is way better.
This is way better. Way, way better.
Yeah, because then we get to see the banner in the first episode of Picard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get to see the little doll.
The little doll.
Yeah. And also, yeah. all the kids' stuff was actually done by local elementary schools.
They were! Theater.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So then I'm thinking like the art department is sitting there for like 3 weeks doing little dolls of Picard.
Now they got two local elementary schools to do it.
That is good.
Yeah. So, there's someone now who's probably in the 30s going, I did that.
So do you think that the banner shown in this episode and the banner shown in the first episode of Picard is the exact same?
Nope. Not at all.
I think they would have
already checked
it off.
Okay. Oh, I guess it was just, from another year, maybe. That's the one that we see in Picard. Okay, let's get to the story. An admiral comes on and says, you're to meet with the crazy horse. And guess what? They get to exceed speed limits for the mission.
Yay!
It doesn't matter what it causes damage to subspace or not. You can go as fast as you want. And if you get pulled over, drop my courtesy card and you'll be fine.
They don't keep that warp limit up for long, do they? They kind of skirt around it after a few episodes and just...
Yeah, they kind of wrote themselves into a corner with that and then ignored it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. So Riker and Picard go to the transporter to meet this special emissary or envoy or whatever you want to call him. And that's when we find out there's going to be another Commander Riker Day or Commander Riker Day starting next month. Who beams over? Admiral Eric Pressman, Riker's commanding officer on the Pegasus. In fact, that's why he's here. What do you think about Riker in this, the way he looks? I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question. The look on his face when he sees Pressman come aboard, Pressman starts talking about the Pegasus, and the look on Jonathan Frakes' face is pretty good.
Yeah, it's like, oh shit, I thought I'd never see you again.
Yeah.
Or hoped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he says, it's good to see you. I like hell, look like you're about to pass out. Oh, no, I'm fine. I just, got to figure out how to get through this with my career intact, because it didn't work the last time.
Let me ask you for a question. Do you think the Pegasus was a Section 31 thing?
No.
What? Why not?
No, we don't want to retcon everything that has ever happened shady in Star Trek to be Section 31.
Agreed.
Right, because it becomes, you know, the universe will eat itself, a bit like how the Star Wars universe eats itself, where everyone has to be related to someone. It's nonsense, right, as far as I can tell.
Star Wars is just two families messing up a galaxy.
I mean, what's the benefit in saying that it's Section 31?
I'm just asking.
It makes the universe smaller.
It does make the universe smaller. Mm.
Okay.
I don't want to be like you moan, but I honestly thought that there doesn't have to be like one. There's not like one department at Starfleet that's doing dodgy stuff, right? There's so many dodgy admirals, or the Batmirals, I think. Sean,
yeah, there's
mentioned.
Loads of Batmirals.
Batmirals.
I mean, considering the Pegasus is after the Tracy, so it shouldn't exist at all.
Mm-mm.
You know, and it's a bit like you build a super secret starship and have a model of it on your desk.
Right. Who would do that? No one would ever do that.
No.
Trek 2012.
By the way, I mean, did they actually, hang on, have they brought Section 31 into Discovery?
No, because they're 900 years in the future, aren't they? Mm-hmm.
No, but I thought that they had like the black badges and stuff. Have they mentioned it explicitly, or is it just it like inferred that it's Section 31?
Come on, have you not seen all of season 2 with Section 31?
Yeah.
They mentioned it explicitly, right? Okay.
More than explicitly.
Tyler's actually working for Section 31.
Yeah, it's stupid. It really is.
And the spin-off series that
Michelle Yeoh?
Shao Yeoh's doing his Section 31, yeah.
Is that ever going to happen?
I freaking hope not.
It gets a distinct... I mean, it feels like it's like a... It feels like they're just keeping her happy. Father being
Well, that's
off.
Why you have the episode with the Guardian of Tomorrow. Because they send her back so she can be back in the other timeline so she can be in Section 31.
Exactly. Okay, Luke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, Guardian of Tomorrow. What do you think about that twist?
Guardian of Forever.
Guardian of Forever. Who said tomorrow? Anyway, it was me. one of the big problems with Discovery and also Picard, and it's not to do with them specifically, it's to do with how you consume the current Star Trek.
You can have a moan again?
Well, it's that I have no intention of ever rewatching them. Right? So the whole point of episodic television, I find it much easier to digest, piece by piece. Whereas
a story arc,
I think that when you solely have story arc, it just becomes very it becomes hard, right?
You like DS9?
I was going to say, but we're in trouble then.
No, DS9 isn't. It's not continuous story arc. It evolves from episode to episode, but it's not continuous story arc. You have the Ferengi
War episode. Is a continuous story arc.
It's not a continuous. I mean, they do like, I think they do like 6 episodes at the beginning of season 6, and like they end with 10 episode run. But it doesn't really, you know, they have time and space to breathe.
Hmm. Yeah, which always puzzled me because they're supposed to be at war. But anyway.
Okay, so unless you guys have more to go on, let's talk about the mission.
Let's get past the teaser.
Welcome to Tangent Cast.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good name for a podcast.
Tangent Cast. Okay, so let's talk about the mission. We're to refine the Pegasus, retrieve it, or destroy it if necessary, which there's no way that was ever going to happen. And what do they run across? A Romulan warbird with one of the most polite commanders I've ever seen.
It should have been Tomalak.
You think?
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
There's only one. There's only one Romulan that is worth anything.
That's right.
Maybe Sela. They could have had Sela back.
Ooh, yes.
What, you don't like Donatra?
She's hot.
Okay. I thought this commander was pretty good. He makes some serious threats while still being polite about it.
He's also in the Star Trek first.
He's very syrupy.
Yes. Yes.
He's the first black Romulan.
Yes! I thought that too. Okay. Well then, I guess,
I loved the way that him and Picard do their interchanges though, because it's menaced politeness.
Wasn't there a Gul Dalak that he also had the almost the same kind of politeness to?
Yes.
Not in this episode.
Not in this episode, but in this
episode.
Oh, yeah, you want to say in this episode. Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, okay. That's fine. So, they're very nice to each other, you know. So, you know, what are you doing here? Oh, we're just here studying. Oh, well, that's amazing, because so are we. Two. Yeah. Gee, did we accidentally seal you in there? Because I don't know.
My bad.
I
think,
yeah. Oops. You know. My we bad. Were taking some sample readings and So Pressman wants to try this experiment again. What experiment are we talking about? I don't know, but a lot of higher ups want it as well. Yep, everybody wants this mission. So, what do you think of Riker? I mean, would you like... I wouldn't want to be Riker at all in this, because he's got a captain on one side wanting information, and you better tell me what's going on. You have an admiral on this side that's saying, you better not say a word about any of this.
The other interesting thing with this is the Pegasus was Riker's first posting, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So, this is a super-secret starship. And it's Riker's first posting. So he must have done really well at the Academy.
Could have.
And also, and considering it was his first posting and it was a short postman, Pressman was really impressed with him in that short space of time.
Oh, he came to his aid. Of course he's going to be impressed.
Yeah.
So Geordi finds the Pegasus, at least we believe. It's inside an asteroid. Now, how in the world could that have happened? Oh, yeah, that's right. It could have just floated in there by itself. No problem. So,
you know, big enough hole, the Enterprise flew in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they decide that since the Romulans are now heading our way and they want to see what we're interested in, let's flood this whole area with ionizing radiation and then move along. It worked. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's flood the area with ionized radiation after we've done an episode where you can't go past War 5 because the radiation's messing the universe up.
Hmm. Okay. So, what else do we want to talk about this? Well, actually, Picard does find out what happened on the Pegasus because he got his hands on a report of mutiny. And he had to pull in a lot of favors about that. What is that noise?
It's you.
No, it's not. That's why I'm asking. It's coming out of my headphones, not into my microphone. It's like something. But anyway, it's gone.
James is back. Tiger.
I don't have a tiger. I have two cats. But,
probably what it is.
Yeah. No. Okay. Who all heard that?
I'm not hearing anything.
No, I'm not hearing anything either.
Nope.
Oh, for the love of God. Here I am.
You're losing it.
My wife says that. I say, what's that rattle? I don't hear anything. I hear something rattle. Okay. So, let's talk about the discussion Picard and Will have about the mutiny. Should Riker have even given him the information he did? You know? The firefight, we had to get off the ship, and here I was, 6 months out of the Academy, my head ringing with honor, and yada, 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 and I defended my captain. Should he have even talked about any of that?
Well, yeah, that was part of the record already. That was just common knowledge.
Oh, I don't think so.
It wasn't common knowledge, because if Picard had to pull in a lot of fibers to get that report, was it common knowledge?
In the report, it was. That's what I mean. Like,
yeah,
not everybody knows about it, but
yeah.
In the report, he'd already read that part.
Yeah, it wasn't classified or wasn't secret.
He just said what he could say that was already known.
Okay.
I don't know. And then when Picard pushes further, he says, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm under orders.
Right. Okay. Because at that point, I would have said, you know, look, I can't talk about this. Whatever information you have, fine, that's information you've got. I can't talk about this. He probably still should have shut up. Just because the guy, you know, because Picard has the information in front of him, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Maybe he's bluffing. You know, I got this in this pad in my hand. It's got a top secret report that was quietly buried. Does he really? I don't know. It just seemed like Riker gave too much information. But, okay. He's going to have to believe that Riker has the best interest of the ship at heart. And if not, well, then he will redo the command structure. What did he say? Reevaluate the command structure of the ship?
Yep.
Yeah.
So then who's going to take Riker's spot?
Well, it'd be Data. He's next.
Hmm. Okay. Okay, so anyway, 0800, the next morning, they go back to the asteroid, and they have to figure out a way to get inside. And, of course, Pressman says, hey, why don't we just, you know, fly right on in, too? So he gives them orders. Go right on in. And Picard says to Data, please note. And did you notice Data's face? Is, you know, he's noting for the log that he's following this order under protest. And you get this glare from Data saying, so noted. Do you notice that?
Yep.
It's a nice, nicely composed scene. I think it's you know, the way that he picks up and goes, you know, so noted. It's one of those things you can imagine being clipped out and becoming a meme.
So noted. But it doesn't look like Data runs to a station. And I'm noting this real quick. No, they're too busy. They got things to do. So they go on in.
He's not going to forget, though, is he?
No. But if they don't make it out alive, then it's not going to get noted. Okay.
I suppose it's true.
Well, Data doesn't forget anything, does he? So.
No.
Do you think that, you know, in the event like of a catastrophic ship failure, instead of the Enterprise like jettisoning a black box kind of thing, they should jettison Data to shoot him out the back? Because then he could be recovered, right? Quite easily.
Yeah, he doesn't need a spacesuit.
Yeah. Just shoot Data out the back.
There you go. Sounds like a plan. So the Enterprise enters this asteroid, and did you guys dig the floodlights?
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, that's a nice touch, yeah.
I had no idea at that point that the saucer section had floodlights.
It's got everything.
I guess. I mean, wouldn't the sensors be good enough? Who's actually watching the floodlights and not the sensors?
Everyone in 10 forward.
People are looking out the windows. They got to see.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody's on the bridge.
That is so true.
There's like 1,000 other people there that want to look out the window.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But they find the Pegasus, and they find it inside solid rock. And they still don't, only two people have an idea of how that could have happened. Even Data has no idea how that could possibly have happened.
It's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the audience like knows, right, at this point? Or yeah. Am I mistaken? So you kind of you hear Pressman shout him down and say, look, let's not speculate. Move on.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, you're really, you know, I do think this episode does put Riker. He's in a clearly very uncomfortable position, right? And you know that he knows more than the rest of the people on the ship, and you know that there's a lot of suspicion going on about this mission. And it's just, I feel like all of these scenes, as they are discovering this, you know, the pieces of the puzzle are all that are really cool.
At this point, when we find the Pegasus, we don't know about the cloaking device, do we? I mean, they talk about the experiment, but they don't describe what it is. No, it's not until they get on board and, you know, Riker and, yeah, Pressman get on board and they have a nice discussion around all these dead bodies about what this thing represents.
Oh, and speaking of the dead bodies, did you notice they have the new uniforms, not the season 1 and 2 uniforms?
Yeah, considering they've been there for 12 years.
Yeah, they done fucked up in the continuity department.
I didn't notice that, because they're usually quite good at this. They certainly still have the old uniforms on, you know, on the rack, right?
I don't know about that, but on the Pegasus they had the new uniforms instead of the season one and two. But in Enterprise, when Riker was looking at the old personnel files, all the people in those photos had the old style uniforms with the lines on the collar. So Enterprise got it right. Next Generation, not so much.
And also that the bodies were remarkably well preserved.
Yeah, they weren't exploded or anything.
No.
Okay, hold on. Let's talk about that, because he did say everything was well preserved due to the vacuum of space. Does that mean the body should never have been there? They should have been floating around in space somewhere?
I would imagine.
But the gases in the body would have expanded, and if there was exposed to the vacuum of space, there would have at least been, you know, subject to ice.
Mm-hmm. They didn't have the budget for makeup effects.
No. Hang on a second. I'm just going back. Look, there's a guy on the ground that's in the. He's got a gold uniform. He certainly does have a Series 1 uniform on.
Are you sure? Because it looked like it was looking like the newer ones to me.
How many people are there in the?
Three, I think.
Okay, there's someone there. Let me have a quick check. I mean, it's not that I don't need to. It's not integral to the plot.
No, but it certainly looks like the new fabric, not the old spandex.
I think the one that's lying down on the stairs does look. Yeah, he looks like he has the new one on. I did have a problem with this, by the way. That they find the ship. They find the ship that has been, you know, basically it's half inside rock, and somehow that didn't mean the entire thing exploded. I mean,
right?
that surely would have exploded immediately. For this not to have exploded, like one of the nacelles is in the rock, surely immediate kaboom. Anything important, right, in terms of like electrical or you know, the antimatter or whatever, immediate kaboom.
I agree, but then we wouldn't have a story, so we'll just forget about that. Never mind, you're thinking too much about it.
What they could have done, right? They could have just had the thing float inside the asteroid and then emerge inside the asteroid and just, then just crash. So yes. they didn't have to have it like the cell being inside the rock. Being inside the rock is just...
It looks cool.
I don't think the ship's in a flyable state. I'll put it like that.
Yeah, no, it's not going anywhere again.
No, I suppose not. Okay, so anyway, Wrecker and Pressman beam over, they find the piece of equipment, and they find themselves, as well as the Enterprise, sealed in by the Romulans, so let's beam this over there and see what we can do.
But by the way, okay, a couple of things I need to bring up on this tangent of mine. So cloaking devices are small, are they? They're like these tiny things, are they? Just apparently. Something you can plug in. It's like the size of a microwave, and that's it. And this brings me back to the Emperor's new cloak in Deep Space Nine, where Quark and Rom steal a cloaking device and they're carrying this thing going in and out of cloak.
It was close.
It's just so ridiculous.
But you've also got the Enterprise incident in TOS where Kirk carries it.
Yeah, it's just a ball. Yeah, it's a ball on a thing. On a like stick. It's the old Nomad prop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's changed over the years.
I kind of get the impression a cloaking device should be like, you know, really, you probably have the cloaking device and you build the ship around it, right? Like a warp core. It's the idea of popping over and stealing someone's warp core should be as ridiculous as popping over and stealing someone's cloaking device.
I totally agree, but then that doesn't mesh with any plots, right? So you have to make it small so you can just carry it and do whatever you want with it.
No,
you can steal it.
Well, okay, progression. Things get smaller but get more powerful. Our cell phones took us to the moon one day, you know? The amount of energy in our cell phones, didn't that take us to the moon? Oh, I'm sorry, what I meant by us is United States, not you guys.
Hang on.
Been Canadians up in space and British people.
I'm not entirely sure about British, by the way. Whenever someone vaguely happens to have had a British, grandfather. They always get claimed as being British when they effectively went up on a NASA program and spent the entire life in America.
But, no, just been two Brits in space.
Who?
Helen Sharman went up with the Russians.
Okay. Did she not?
Hold on. Where did she go?
She went to the space station.
Ah, I said the moon.
Yeah.
Oh, the moon. Oh, only Americans have been to the moon.
Wait a minute. You mean, okay.
Oh, hang on. Who built the cooling unit for the spacesuits that went to the moon? Oh, that was right. Britain.
Anyway, the thing I'm asking is that, no, Luke, you don't have more energy in your phone than it took to get to the moon, right? Okay, not energy.
Computing power,
sure, but not energy. You know, the energy barely gets through a day on.
And don't forget, on the space shuttle, Canada built the arm.
The Canadarm.
Canadarm.
It's in the name. Canadarm.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, Canada, that's the thing. Canadarm.
Okay. Have you any of you guys ever seen this HBO series From the Earth to the Moon?
Heard of it, that's it.
Okay.
We don't have HBO.
Oh, no, okay.
Relatively hard to get as well in the UK.
Oh, then you guys got to find it somehow, because it's very enlightening. But the first Apollo mission, fire on the dock and all the way up through the Apollo mission.
Oh, they had a series on Netflix about the mission to the moon. That was really good. They did the fire on the docks and all that type of stuff. Yeah, and the developments and all the things that they had to overcome. Yeah, that was brilliant.
Was it hosted by Tom Hanks?
No.
Okay, yeah, that's a different series, so I would like to see that one. But From the Earth to the Moon is hosted by Tom Hanks and talks about the Apollo mission. And here's the thing, the reason I bring that up is throughout that series, you hear accents from just about everywhere. You got the English guy who was one of the flight controllers. You have the German guy who was the pad leader. A whole bunch of different people. So, yeah, I mean, it took people from around the world to get America to space.
Yeah, I do believe I saw that about 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, Werner von Braun was German.
Mm-hmm. There you are. Yeah.
And he built the V-2.
Anyway. Yep. It was Gunter Wendt. Gunter Wendt, who was the pad leader. They called him the pad Führer. So, okay.
Is that not insensitive just after the war? I don't know. And the other thing I have to point out, which will trump all of it, is that, you know, Scotty himself was Scottish.
Yeah. I guess he was. So
basically getting to the moon was you know, a massive effort with loads of people, but basically they couldn't have done it without American money. End of story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, we did it first, so take that, Russians. Okay, so they beam this thing back, and now they need to figure out how to get out of this asteroid, to which Riker then says, as the pressman says, "You just ruined your career, mister." "Hey, Captain, I've got a great idea." Down in his quarters, underneath his pillows, under his blankets, where he fondled it last night, you're going to find a Federation cloaking device that also is an interphasic cloaking device. So that pisses off Picard again. And
Pressman.
Oh, Picard. That's what that's about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we signed a treaty. Yes, and it was the worst thing we ever did. I'm not sure what side I'm on, because I feel like I'm on both. I don't believe the treaty is right. I think it's wrong, but yet I'm on Picard's side saying, hey, it's the treaty. It's just what it is, and we have to live with it.
But this is the flaw in Pressman's viewpoints, is no one wins an arms race. But Pressman believes in the arms race. He believes that if they have it, we have to have it. But then if you have it, then they will build a better version, and then you have to build a better version. So it's a never. That's what an arms race is. It's a never-ending thing. And that's this is Pressman's problem.
Right.
We've got a better cloaking device than them. Well, the Romulans have just built it. We already had an episode in Next Generation, The Next Phase,
yes,
where they had a phasing cloak.
That didn't work out too well for those guys.
No, but if they knew that the Federation had a phasing cloak that worked, that would make it work.
Yep.
But why is Federation just you know, making much better sensors. Because you would imagine that the thing to get around the cloak is the sensors.
Said. It's like what Sean said, it's plot lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also like that on the other side, when we have a couple of occasions where you do see the Romulan side, like face of the enemy, for example, it is not just a simple like, we press a button, we're invisible, everything is fine, right? There is this look, a cloak might not be perfect. They might still be able to pick things up. You shouldn't really be moving. There are drawbacks you have. I think that's also a very interesting.
But that's like Star Trek VI, isn't it? When Uhura says that thing's got to have a tailpipe.
Hey, my car doesn't even have a tailpipe. Why does the bird of prey need a tailpipe?
What do you mean your car doesn't have a tailpipe?
It's electric.
What an electric car?
Ah, that's why.
Uh-huh. So I don't know. That's dating that film a little bit more and more each time I watch it.
Well, there was actually referring to plasma, weren't there? They were saying it's got to vent plasma.
Yeah, but in a way, why? Right? Can't it just like put a... Look, if you find a way of
light. I'm imagining a dog growling and whimpering. That's got to be in my head, I tell you.
No, that's my animals. The wife went and had a shower, and so she brought them downstairs, and now they're fighting with each other.
Good. See, guys, I'm not losing my head. Now go on, James.
I heard nothing, Lou.
Yeah, too late.
Let me mute myself here for a minute.
No, one of the is interesting things in the one of my nitpicks in this episode is that as soon as they put across the fact that they've got a phasing cloak, someone asks Data, can we plug it in? And he basically goes, sure. I mean, like, straight away, why not? We'll do it now. It just plugs in. I mean, I would have expected, like, It's like that joke from what? It's like the joke from Independence Day, where surely you wouldn't have been able to interface with the extraterrestrial species using a Mac. I would imagine there would need to be a bit more time to bring in the...
In the Enterprise incident, Scotty plugs it into the Enterprise.
But look, having a criticism about the Enterprise incident is not... I can criticize both episodes. You shouldn't have plug-and-play for tech like this, and you shouldn't be able to carry the tech. So
but Pressman said that some of the designs for the Pegasus were incorporated into the Enterprise. That's foreshadowing. That's why it works.
Okay, if that's foreshadowing, I will take off my hat to them. I'm not convinced it is foreshadowing. I thought that they were just trying to find a way so that they were.
Don't argue with me.
Plot line. Okay. Plot line. It's just plot line.
That's right. It all comes together. It's a good episode. We already discussed that.
It is a good episode. I don't disagree.
I know. I'm just taking the piss, as you British people say.
Okay. So what would have happened if they didn't have that cloaking technology? It didn't work. The Enterprise is stuck in the asteroid. And the Romulans have offered to transport them over to their ship, take them home, and after a brief stay, they'll return. Yeah, no, shower.
What they've done is, as we all know, the phasers have got multiple settings. They would have just changed the phaser setting to boring and cut the way out the asteroid.
Exactly.
Oh, they have cut out. Yeah, they have. They've done that with the ships before. They've done that with. They did it. Was it the last episode or a couple of episodes ago with Force of Nature, where they basically were shooting into the planet down to the core? They should be able to get out of an asteroid, I would imagine. The thing I quite like about this is they put it together, this like little tense moment, right, as the Enterprise is going towards the brick wall or the rock of the asteroid and hoping to be able to phase through it. And you never have the finish where the Enterprise hits the rock and then just crashes. They always manage to get through, which is... it would have been nicer if they would have ended one of these episodes with the Enterprise actually crashing.
Like alternate cuts?
Yeah, like, that didn't work, and now the Enterprise has blown up.
Well, what's even more remarkable with that, when they're flying out, is Picard says, take or say, and Worf says, "Aye, sir." Worf's tactical. He's not helm.
So I noticed
why
that
was
too.
Worf flying the bloody ship?
Because they had to keep the shot tight, and they didn't want to pan over to the helm.
You have Enton Gates again this week, who I'm told that everything that she says is redubbed. By the way, that's what I'm aware of. Apparently, that's what happens with her. She's not like a card carrying actress. So she ends up having to have all of her stuff redubbed.
Makes sense. She's probably a stunt double.
Because this week she seemed to be talking properly, right? It didn't seem like
an equity card, mate.
Well, or whatever the equivalent is in the US.
SAG, Screen Actors Guild card.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. SAG card. But I do have a couple questions about this sequence here. Number one, what do you think it would have been like on Romulus for the Enterprise crew? We'll take you to Romulus and you're going to be our guest for a little bit. What do you think that would have been like?
I would have just gone down to the sewer system and met Spock earlier.
Sorry, I don't understand what you just said. What does that mean?
Because the separatists are in the sewer system at Romulus, isn't they?
Oh, that's right. But I meant that, that obviously there's going to be an interrogation.
Well, Picard's pretty hard to crack, as we know.
Oh, wow. Because he's got five lights.
Yeah. Hmm. So,
Is it four lights?
Data's an android, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have to reverse engineer him.
Yeah.
Oh, but there's going to be some incident in engineering that's going to crack and give them all the secrets.
True.
By the way, I would imagine what would have happened is that they would have had them for a couple of days. I would have thought fairly quickly they would have got them back. They probably would have lost the Enterprise in terms of the actual ship, right? Or at least it would have been hacked and the core dumped into a Romulan server somewhere. But I wouldn't have thought that they would have just tortured them or killed them, right? You slightly exist in this Cold War scenario with the Romulans, and you probably don't want that to be escalated.
Okay. The second question I have is, let's say that the phasic part of the cloaking system didn't work and the ship was going toward the wall. You guys said it would blow up. Why would it have to blow up? I mean, if it just hits the wall, couldn't it just go boom, dent the front part of it, and nope, we can't go through that. Why does it have to blow up?
It depends how fast you're going, right? So if you're going, like your car, if you take your car and you're 120 miles an hour into a wall, your car's probably going to blow up. If it's only in three, then you'll just bump off the wall.
Yeah, they were doing thrusters.
Ah.
They didn't. Okay, so they would have been okay.
Maybe I would have tapped it and nick the front part of the ship.
Like when they crashed into the Scimitar with the other ship at the final movie.
I saw a clip. A clip got recommended to me on YouTube of that for some reason. I have no idea why. I was just looking around. In complete fairness, I think I was Googling Brent Spiner, and there was an episode of he was on a TV show in the UK, and they showed that as a clip. But the odd thing about it is that Troy drives, right? That's what she does. Uh-huh. She's the person that crashes. But Picard says, "Deanna, engage." But why would he be saying Deanna? That's her first name. That's not her title. That's not her surname. I don't know why he would be so kind of loose with the formality. It seemed inappropriate. Anyway.
Okay.
Just a fleeting thought.
I will let that go, I guess. Okay, so they get out. There was only 3 kilometers of rock, apparently. I would have thought there'd been more. But they're out, and they uncloak right next to the Romulan, who does nothing about it. I would have thought firefight was going to start. But no. Hey, call them over real quick. Call them real quick. Let them know that their government will be finding out about this shortly. And then that's it. Oh, no, that's not it. No. Admiral Pressman and Commander Riker are placed under arrest and put in the brig. Do you think maybe Riker got off a little bit too easy?
No. He was an ensign. It's fine. He told the truth when it mattered.
But he didn't in the beginning. I mean, he probably should have told the truth from the start.
He's been a rock in a hard place,
Yeah. Yes, I guess he is.
And besides, we have 10 episodes of the season left to go, so he has to be there.
Yeah, and yeah. Also the movies, you know.
Yeah, but that's right.
And that's but not...
What is really... What are they going to charge Riker with? Right? I didn't...
Conspiracy orders.
No, but given that he's under the command of the Admiral, right? Given that there was an investigation into it, given that it's clearly signed off by the people at Starfleet Intelligence, given that he was probably told explicitly that he was not supposed to talk about it to anyone, you know, like someone in the military, right? It's not up to them to interpret international treaties and understand the nuances of the legal position they find themselves in.
I was just following orders.
Yep. But that doesn't always work.
No. Yeah, and there's also another episode where Picard says that tried and tested excuse, I was just following orders.
Yep. Depends on the plot that week.
Depends on the plot, yeah.
All right.
But also, the other interesting thing about Noel is when Riker was on the Pegasus, he was an ensign. Mm-hmm. So he went, if you do the timeline thing, he went from ensign to commander in 6 years. So you got to think him keeping quiet helped his career.
Mm. Yes, I can see that. All right. Well, anyway, but Pressman's going to be court-martialed. A bunch of people in Starfleet are going to get court-martialed, but Riker's going to have to answer a few uncomfortable questions. Nobody's going to have to be interrogated on Romulus, and it's time to leave.
I think we should propose a new Star Trek series, by the way, which is entirely set in the disciplinary courts of Starfleet headquarters, where they get admiral after admiral after admiral in defending all of the crimes that they've done. They could have like one, you know, like you know, a one story per season, right? It's like this week it's Pressman, and you try him, and then the next week it's you know, the guy from Into Darkness, and you try him, and you could just keep on going. It will be
The head of Starfleet would turn around to HR and say, look, you need to, like, you know, review your procedures for promoting all these people to admiral.
Right.
Because HR are clearly getting it wrong.
Star Trek JAG.
Okay. Or how about a Star Trek series that, you know, is about truly honorable Klingons? Oh, that's got to be difficult.
That'd be a short series.
Yes, very short series.
Oh, I know you could lead the JAG up, Nechayev.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she wouldn't take any prisoners.
Oh, no. I like her. She's fun.
They should have the sweary, the sweary admiral from Picard. Hmm. Like, she'll be there as a judge, and whenever someone's trying to stay, you know, slightly, you know, stray aside, she'll be just, you know, shut the F up and move on.
Shut up, Wesley.
Okay.
I think that Picard did something wrong with the swearing, right? What they should have done, that they should have only had the Admiral swear, like no one else. They should have had the language exactly as the TNG, except for that Admiral, and just have it almost as, you know, in the future we're very happy to bring in, you know Tourette's isn't an issue anymore. You can be brought in as an admiral with extremely extremely uncontrollable language.
Okay, well, anyway, I guess that's pretty much it. Is there anything I missed?
You missed a 47 reference.
Wasn't it like 247 or something?
Yeah, well, the Starbase.
And wasn't the end of the NCC 47 as well on the ship, on the Pegasus?
Yeah, that's the other thing. The Pegasus is supposed to be a prototype, but it hasn't got an X.
No, it doesn't.
But Aaron, it doesn't. I thought the X's were only for the prototype ship designs.
Because that's a regular starship. It's just got experimental equipment. It's not an experimental ship.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's an Nova, which we already know by this time is old, because it was in Kirk's era.
Okay. Anything else,
five,
guys?
Five, it's
always good to see an Excelsior.
Okay. So I think somebody, did one of you guys bring up Admiral Nechayev?
Yeah.
Okay. I was just thinking, it reminded me of... did you guys hear the interview we did with her, Natalia Nugalich?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was pretty nice talking to her. We even went on a couple tangents, one about the practice, and remember, we also did news from the future, and she actually provided a quote as Admiral Nechayev, which was damn fun to do.
Yes, that's awesome.
Oh, it was. It was fun. So, okay. If you guys
didn't... she could be sued for that.
No. No, because all she said was, we can't give away our Federation secrets. That's pretty much it. I don't think they would even bother with it.
Yeah.
But if if she's got the money to defend herself, I don't. Okay, so before we go, guys, let's go ahead and give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. So let's go in the same order. Colin, let's start with you. Let's give us your final thoughts and your rating.
I really like this episode. You know, it's brilliant written, brilliantly acted. Pressman is typically the guy that you hate all the way through the episodes, which just goes how wonderful he was acted. We get to see more about Riker. We finally find out why the Federation doesn't have cloaking technology, even though they've stole it left, right, and centre. And we also find out that Riker has... more depth to him than just being the Lothario of Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a breaking point in their relationship, Picard and Riker's relationship, that is very well handled in this, where Picard quite literally turns around to him and says, pick a side, and if you don't pick me, I'm going to get a new first officer.
Yeah.
And the dynamics for where all of this were brilliant. So yeah, I really enjoyed this episode, and I would I'd give it a 4, yeah. Definitely a 4.
Okay. We'll give that a 4. And Sean, how about you?
Well, I agree with everything that Colin just said. It's an amazing episode. It's definitely one of the tops of Season 7. Always good to see another side of Riker. Everybody did a great job. And, of course, you hate Admiral Pressman, so that just says how good of an actor Terry Quinn is. O'Quinn, or whatever his name is. And I don't know. Just love it. And I had to watch the sequel immediately following, so I'll give it a 5 out of 5.
5 out of 5. The sequel. Okay. James, how's about you?
Oh, no. This is excellent, this episode. I think this is the point. I mean, I don't think there are very many kind of top-notch episodes in Season 7, but this is one of them. I have no hesitation in giving this 5 out of 5. I don't like Picard. Sorry, I don't like Riker particularly very much. But this episode's a great, like, you know, backstory on Riker, and you can see how torn he is. You can see the conflict he's put under. It's also a really good sci-fi story, right? Which is like, you know, the pickle they find themselves in, how they solve it. And actually, Picard's in the right on all of this. He makes the right call, and this is just great. I really love this episode. And I think that this is I'm going to say it's a turning point of the season. I think this is when the season starts getting... I mean, maybe last episode was the turning point. Now, let me just take 1 second as a tangent here, which is yesterday I got vaccinated. It was my first vaccination yesterday. And I was told by my wife that you should go to sleep and you should basically, you know, have a lie down, make sure you don't, you know, don't take it too hard or anything. So I did. I went to bed pretty early, around 7 o'clock or so. Just went upstairs, started watching Trek. I watched the Pegasus, and I didn't stop until I finished All Good Things earlier on this morning. So I did a 14-hour Star Trek Next Generation binge on the back of this.
That's awesome.
Wow. I didn't ever heard that as a side effect.
Having said that, my arm is a little bit, you know, it does hurt this morning. It feels like I've been punched, but I don't think it's related to the Trek. And just, by the way, just to be clear, there was probably about 8 episodes in the middle where I was asleep, and I slept through things like, you know, Homeward and Masks. And I was woken up by a mask. That's something to be woken up by, I can tell you, at midnight.
Oh, that's brutal, that one.
Well, surely you were awake for Sub Rosa.
No, Sub Rosa was probably what sent him to sleep.
Yeah. It's a good thing he's still alive. Okay.
And actually, the thing that I liked about... I'm so looking forward to doing All Good Things in a couple of years' time. Because the age the age of the actors in All Good Things in the future is basically how they are now, right? So you look at people, and it's probably entirely inappropriate to look at, you know, future Riker and think, nah, they were optimistic there, weren't they?
The weird thing with that, though, is
Patrick Stewart now is the age that he was in that episode, and he looks younger.
Yeah, he actually does. You're right. I think the only thing that they got wrong with Stewart, Patrick Stewart, was that he's now obviously fully shaved his head, right? Whereas back then he still had the I don't know what you call the thing at the back there.
The monk. He had the monk look.
The monk. The backwards fringe. Okay, enough nonsense from me. Luke, what did you think?
Well, I didn't get your rating yet. Is it a 5 or what?
5. I said that right at the beginning. 5. Yeah, 5 out of 5. This is truly excellent. I don't know if there are that many more 5s coming in season 7, but this is one of the top episodes of season 7, as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Okay. 5 it is. Okay, then. For me, you know, you guys have pretty much said it all. This is an excellent one. I do love conspiracies, and I don't like Pressman as a person, but I think I'm with Pressman on this topic. This was the treaty was bullshit. It never should have been accepted. The Federation has two. Like I said, I guess I don't even need to say this again because I actually put it in there that the Federation had two enemies at the time, the Romulans and the Klingons. So unless they were like at the brink of surrendering to either one, if not both, I can't imagine why they would have agreed to this treaty. But they did, and they have to live with it, so... Okay, having said that, the Federation did violate the treaty, so clearly, this is what you get. And we don't see any follow-up, so we don't know what's going to happen. Like, during the Dominion War, did they let Pressman out of prison, if they put him in prison, to help fight the war? Or I liked to see how the treaty might have taken a beating because of this episode. But we didn't see any of that. And that's okay. It doesn't matter. It's still, this is an excellent, excellent episode. And I am with you guys totally that it deserves a 5. 5 out of 5. Now, I want to talk about our ratings so far. After 12 episodes, James, you and me... Since there's essentially 24 regular episodes, and then the finale is a 25 and 26, I guess.
Carry on.
So after the first 12 episodes, my average rating is a 3.0, yours is a 3.8, and our guest is out of 5, an 8.10. Now, how did we get an 8.10, guys?
There's no such number as 8.10. It's 8.1.
Okay, 8.1. But how did we get an 8.1? Because on the last episode, Sean gave Parallels a 25.
And it was very well deserved as well.
He gave him a 25. It hasn't gone out yet. That's why you haven't heard it, Colin. But yeah, he gave it a 25 out of 5. Yeah.
What would you give this out of 5? 25. I like it.
Yes.
Favorite episode of all time.
And there was, I am having a hell of a time finding which one it was, but there was an episode where James just out of his mouth just came like a 9 or something, and I can't find it, so I obviously corrected it. But I remember he did that one time. But okay, so there we are. I'll go ahead and correct that to a 5. So the guests still like Star Trek a lot more this time, 4.10. And we're hovering around 3 stars.
Yeah, you've got sub-rows are coming up, so that'll adjust it.
Oh, yeah, it should. Plus, we only have 5 guests this season so far. But we do have guests all the way through, except for Bloodlines. We've got nobody on Bloodlines. I can't imagine why.
Why is no one on Bloodlines?
I don't know. Nobody's asked for it.
I'll put me down for it, then.
Okay, I'll put Colin down for it. Okay, guys. Now, before we leave... I forgot to ask everybody who has a podcast that you want to plug. Now's your time. Go for it.
So I do this podcast for the Battle Bridge.
Yeah, tell me about the Battle Bridge.
Okay. Oh, it's nonsense. Nothing that's nonsense from start to finish.
Yeah.
And Lou suggested that we were going to do, like, you know, 15 minute episode reviews. And
oh, I said 30 or 45. No, 30 or 45.
It just doesn't work out that way.
No,
never. So anyway, you guys go on.
Does Colin have a podcast?
No, not anymore.
Okay. Well, I used to have three. Now I have two, because as of last week, after 7.5 years, I retired Rusted Robot Podcast. So that's done.
What?
Oh, man.
Too many copyright issues from 2015. So I had to close that off.
Tell us more. What do you mean?
Right on that. Well, the final episode is still out there. You can still listen to it. And in fact, it's episode 199 of the Soulforge podcast as well, because I double dipped into it and made it two episodes. So I still do Soulforge podcast, and I also do Cosmic Pizza podcast with Paul and Dan from the UK. But Rusted Robot, I had two strikes on Podbean from using songs from 2015 that they said, three strikes and you're out. And I was at two strikes, so I had to do a final episode and just be done. Very sad times. End of an era. Maybe I'll start another pop culture podcast one day, but right now I'm taking a break.
Well, I guess a curious question is, did you delete everything or just those two?
Well, I deleted the two in question, and then another one came up, and then they said, that's two strikes. If you get three strikes, then we're going to permanently delete your account. No refunds, nothing. So I figured, you know what? I'm just going to delete all the episodes off the account, except for about 25 of them, which didn't have songs in them. And then I did a final episode last week, and it's about an hour and 20 minutes. I put in every friggin' clip that I could find from the last 7.5 years, and that's going to be permanently gone probably in a week or so once I deactivate that account, but you can still listen to that full episode 199 Soulforge podcast.
I'm sorry to hear that, man.
Me too. It's very sad.
Well, I mean, in the Lutrek show, we used music. It's pretty much music was every opener.
It was fine for 7 years, and then we got on Spotify, and the Spotify algorithms detected it, and Universal Music Group got upset. So my free podcast that I pay for and promote other people's work and music was apparently too offensive. So they said no.
I used music in Trek News and Views, and never had any problems.
I don't know. I think they're picking on me.
Yeah, because Trek News and Views started out on Podbean.
Wow. Right, that's where Soulforge is. Cosmic Pizza, I'm not sure where that is because I don't edit that. I'm just a guest.
Maybe the terms and conditions have changed because Trek News and Views was years ago. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So end of an era.
Okay. All right, guys. Hey, thank you very much. So, you know, why don't we join us next time as we review episode 13, and that is Homeward, and we are slated to have a guest. Till then, take care, everyone, and good night.
Good night. Good day. Is that an actual dog?
That was me.
That's my dog is right here whining because he's trapped in the basement with me, and he doesn't like it.